This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
We'll update the trade war on this Thursday morning. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. U.S. stocks look like they'll open up this morning after China seemed to take a step back from the trade war with the U.S. The question had been, would Beijing retaliate after the latest move from the U.S.? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is live from Washington. Nancy, what's the latest?
A spokesman for China's Ministry of Commerce was quoted this morning as saying Beijing won't retaliate immediately for the latest U.S. increase of tariffs on Chinese products. Bloomberg quotes him as saying, "The question that should be discussed now is about removing the new tariffs to prevent escalation of the trade war." Now, he repeated that answer when asked if that meant China wouldn't retaliate.
But even if the trade war isn't going to escalate further today, it's still at a pretty escalated level.
It sure is. We're still in the thick of it, David. China said it would add more import taxes to American products last week. That caused President Trump to follow suit. The upshot is U.S. tariffs will go up this Sunday on $125 billion of Chinese imports. And these include consumer products like Bluetooth headphones, smartwatches, flat panel TVs and shoes. Another 15% tariff on yet more consumer products from China is set to take effect in December. And that includes things like cell phones, laptops, clothing and toys.
So the comments this morning are progress toward a deal?
Maybe. The Treasury Secretary said yesterday he still expects Chinese negotiators to visit Washington for more meetings.
All right, Nancy, thank you. Markets, Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all up 1% or more. About 2.5 hours here before the opening bell. London's FTSE index up 1.2%. With stocks up, we'd expect bonds would drop. Yes, pushing the yield on the benchmark 10-year interest rate up to 1.49%. Midnight was the deadline for Democratic presidential candidates to get into the party's debate in Houston next month and into a second one a few weeks later. This next one will feature 10 candidates. The Democratic Party raised the threshold for qualifying. Candidates needed not only support in the polls, but at least 130,000 individual donors. Marketplace's Ben Bradford now on how this made the money flow.
The requirement is supposed to show grassroots support. The more high-profile campaigns of, say, Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren easily met that donor threshold. But candidates on the margin of qualifying resorted to other tactics, like this Facebook ad.
If you donate something like $1 or $5, maybe.
That's Henry Gillibrand, son of New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
It will help her get to the next debate stage.
Gillibrand didn't qualify. She dropped out of the race yesterday after spending $850,000 in the past month on Facebook ads alone. Donations are supposed to fund the campaigns, but in some cases, the candidates are spending more than they're making.
The thought here is survive and advance. The debates are the next big opportunity.
Democratic strategist Kelly Dietrich says the ad investment does make sense. Candidates are really spending money for a chance at TV exposure. Plus,
on a good campaign, you would make that money back, not right away, but over time.
Dietrich says once people contribute, they're likely to do it again and again. I'm Ben Bradford from Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
There are new data on immigration costs and benefits. It's focused on one metro area, Atlanta. An analysis from the bipartisan research and advocacy group called New American Economy finds that area benefits from immigration. Susanna Capiluto from WABE in Atlanta has the story.
Let's start with the sweet stuff, cookies from Syria.
Chocolate, vanilla, pistachio, coconut, dates.
Rueda Kader came to Atlanta 3 years ago with her family and her mother's cookie cutters. Now she runs a bakery business with her husband, Khaled. They call it Sweet Sweet Syria. A dozen of the handmade delicacies, like pistachio mamoul, go for about $10. They're for sale at local farmers markets and coffee shops, and also online, says Khaled.
I'm about New York, Florida, Texas, Kentucky, online.
There are a lot of immigrants like Rueda and Khaled who come to Atlanta and start businesses, says Hannah Siegel with New American Economy, a group that measures immigrant contributions to the U.S. economy.
In 2017, immigrants in Atlanta paid nearly $8 billion in federal, state, and local taxes and held $21.6 billion in spending power.
And the number of immigrants who call Atlanta home is growing. 2017 saw an increase of 3.5% in the immigrant population from the previous year. Siegel says overall income for immigrants grew 13% that year. A possible reason?
One trend that we noticed is that the immigrant workforce in the Atlanta metro region is pursuing higher education,
which often leads to higher incomes. New American Economy estimates that Metro Atlanta has more than 73,000 immigrant entrepreneurs. Raghupati Sivakumar is a professor at Georgia Tech and an immigrant. He helps tech startups. Immigrants are often among his students.
I think Georgia Tech being in the heart of Atlanta, to me, is the biggest driver for how entrepreneurial activity is fostered in this environment. There is enough of critical mass of resources where immigrant founders can envision launching a company, taking it off the ground.
Another driver, according to Siegel, is the city's Office of Immigrant Affairs, which was created about 4 years ago. It has several programs that help immigrants. The office is run by Michelle Major.
We get a lot of referrals and a lot of cold phone calls, really, of people who are interested in opening businesses, and we work with them one-to-one through that process.
And the city expanded its equal opportunity programs for women and African Americans in 2015 to include Asian and Latino immigrants. The move means they are now among the groups that receive priority access to city contracts. In Atlanta, I'm Susanna Capiluto for Marketplace.
And we've been following the ruckus created by a column written by the former president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. William Dudley, now a senior research scholar at Princeton, argues that since it's the Fed's job to keep employment high and inflation low, it should not enable Donald Trump. This would, quote, reaffirm the Fed's independence from political pressure. Well, the Federal Reserve firmly distanced itself from that column, and now Senator Tom Tillis, Republican from North Carolina, is calling for the Senate Banking Committee to investigate the independence of America's central bank. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.